From Glitch HQ on Riverside Avenue in Romantic Royal, Minneapolis, this is Nice Games Club, the show where Nice Game Devs talk gaming and game development.
I'm Martha McGarry, and I make Nice Games.
I'm Stephen McGregor, and I make Nice Games.
And I'm Arthur Croy, I too make Nice Games.
In this week's episode, we talk with Gloria Kim and Lane Davis, developers of the game Ruler by Default, to discuss how to make visual novels with limited resources. And so, if everyone is ready,
let's start.
Y'all like books?
I mean,
But you kind of wish they had like some pictures or something.
I like pictures in my books.
Well, can I introduce you to a brand new genre?
Oh, man.
Straight out of Japan.
What is this genre you speak of?
Corey, would you care to introduce what visual novels are?
Go ahead.
Dang, I didn't have anywhere to go with that. A visual novel is a medium wherein you, the user, make choices that determine the storyline. Similar to choose your own adventure books, but with more pictures.
And these are our guests.
We're off to a great start here.
These are our guests. Everyone, thanks for listening.
Goodbye.
So this is what happens when we get five people at this table.
It gets pretty, yeah.
So, let's introduce our guests. Lane, you jumped right in, so why don't you go ahead and give us your spiel. Who are you? What are you doing here?
I work for Gloria. I am a writer for her game, Ruler by Default. Mm-hmm. I also make fishing simulators and games where fish pilot submarines.
True. Both things are accurate. Yeah, you do those.
Very ichthyan existence that I lead these days.
Yes, and Gloria?
My name is Gloria Kim. Mm-hmm. I made Ruler by Default with Lane and other great team members.
Yeah, yes. And from my understanding, you Kickstarted?
Yeah. And we got with help from 500 other Kickstarter backers as well.
How cool.
we literally just did a topic on Kickstarter things and stuff and crowdfunding.
Yeah.
Which we should have had you on to talk about it. Mark actually has some experience with that, but
And I lamented a little bit on the time I wasted even in success. Yeah. But I'm really curious to hear your experience.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, should we jump right into Kickstarter stuff?
Yeah, if you'd like to, sure. Yeah, I mean, that's the beginning of the story, right? Or it probably goes back a little earlier than that. But
So we Kickstarted back in 2014. We got I said 500 backers, but I think we had about 400.
Okay.
We raised about $7,000. It's not a ton of money, but we marketed at the $10 per copy of game. So that's how we got that much money.
Okay.
We just finished Ruler by Default last month. The game was released in May 3rd. And
nice.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting.
Release.
Congratulations.
So, yeah. Well done.
We're still in the midst of sending out the physical goodies for some backers as well.
Oh, okay.
But, yep.
Cool. What goodies are you giving people?
We have physical copies of CD,
yeah.
Which turns out to be a little more difficult to make than I thought.
Yeah.
You can't just drag and drop it onto CD and send it.
I think when you started that Kickstarter, it was just when the first wave was learning how hard that was.
Oh.
It wasn't widely known how miserable an experience that is yet.
So yeah, my first tip is if you do a Kickstarter for your game, do only digital copies. Don't promise physical copies unless you are going to make a lot of money, because it's really a pain in the butt.
You heard it here first.
We also promised some stickers and buttons and some goodie bags. We also promised a mouse pad, which at the time was supposed to be like a cute mouse pad, and I designed it, and I got a question from one of the backers assuming it was going to be one of his booby mouse pads.
So
that was an interesting conversation
goodness.
To have as well.
Okay. And on that note, so you both did a talk at IGDA where you like talked about the process of making a visual novel and going through Kickstarter and stuff. And Lane, I like that equation you had on there.
Oh, thank you.
What was the equation, if you don't mind
going over again? Goodness. Can I do the whole thing? Yes.
Can you?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So the important thing is that the resources that you have going into a game like this are generally pretty constant. Because like it's hard to change the level of time that you have, the amount of money that you're investing, unless you're like a larger studio, the amount of luck that you have, any amount of skill that you have. Though, of course, that grows slowly.
Right.
It's hard to change on a dime.
Yeah.
What you can change during the planning phase is your expectations for the quality of the game, the length of the story mm-hmm. and the amount of choice that you have going into it.
Okay.
And where you choose to land on those three sliders determines the genre of your game inside mm-hmm. of visual novels.
Okay.
Because like you can see some visual novels are very, very, very different from the from others.
Yeah. Yeah, right, right. So there are different kinds. There are ones that like have a lot of different choices involved.
Yeah.
And then there are other ones that are a lot more linear and maybe have one or two very important decisions that you have to make, sure. right?
Yeah. Well, to give some examples, like you could go all the way over to like party games that are entirely about choice, like mm-hmm. seeing what would Steven do in this situation? that is a game like Monster Prom,
yeah.
for example. Okay. And then you have all the way off on the other side, you have the game like Nekopara, kinetic novels,
okay.
which have no choice whatsoever. You're just the person behind the mouse clicking and watching what happens next.
Oh, okay.
And so both of these are called visual novels, but they could not play more differently.
Like they are for different crowds of people too,
well,
right?
It just means that like visual novel, because of the degree to which this genre has been explored, it's sort of like calling something a strategy game at this point. There's just mm-hmm. so much breadth within that.
Yeah. Some of like adventure games can be also yeah. visual novel. Some people classify games like Ace Attorney or, you know, Danganronpa as a visual novel.
Okay.
You know, so it's a really variety of games that sure. can be mm-hmm. classified as it.
Right. I don't play a lot of visual novels.
It's okay.
Personally. But I'm curious like what your audience is looking for when they're playing these games. But maybe particular ruler by default.
Sure. Generally, audience is looking for good story. Like
yeah.
if you're familiar with Steins Gate series,
okay.
Clannad, people want to read good story, and that's why people generally play visual novels, or they want to build that relationship with virtual characters, like a lot of dating sims.
Mm-hmm.
Like Nekopara is one of them, where you date the girls and sometimes have some romantic, sexy times.
<You know? laughs> yeah, yeah.
There isn't too much in Ruler by Default.
Mm-hmm.
But
sell
for
copies, Gloria!
I think our game gets big, maybe. No, I'm kidding. So for Ruler by Default in particular, it's really about our game genre is more about comedy. So mm-hmm. it's just a fun times with the characters, cute characters, and there's a little bit of mystery of what happens.
Okay.
And whatnot.
Okay. Okay. I remember during the talk you said there was some like dark. Is it like dark humor kind of stuff?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. especially towards the end of the game.
Ah.
Absolutely.
Oh, okay. Very interesting.
Yeah.
How big was your team?
Five people. I want to say
roughly okay. five.
Yeah.
We had a lot of helpers that helped us out. That wasn't like particularly part of the team.
Okay.
Like we had some artists that I paid to help with the background on like one-time payment, whatnot. But main team was me doing the main story and main character art, coming up with things. And there was David Richardson who helped with the programming. And there's Lane who was our writing genius. What happened was basically I was like, Lane, I want this to happen. And Lane was like, okay. And he wrote it. So and we had a Jonathan Perigee who helped with most of our music as well. And we had some other people that was helping out with editing and animations.
Okay.
It was pretty cool.
Okay. So I remember earlier, Lynn, you brought up this equation for visual novels, and I wanted to know where did
you are an attack dog with this? give me the numbers.
No, I wanted to know.
Steven Business wants to know the numbers.
Yes, I wanted to know what did you feel like was your limiting factor, and how did you approach that, and how did that like affect the game?
Whoa.
The visual novels.
Well, I'm going to tie us back into Kickstarter here for
a
second. This might be a spicier take than you're willing to agree with, Gloria, so you can bring me in. But I think that in the original plan for the story, we had three or four dateable characters. Mm-hmm. And then in Kickstarter, we ended up saying, if you pay $1,000 or more, you get to add an additional character. And I think it was expected that one person would do this, and we got two that mm-hmm. ended up adding mm-hmm. new characters to the game.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the limiting factors that we had was we were committed to satisfying two people with extremely different tastes. So we had to like sort of research and learn a lot to write these two new characters.
Okay.
And so the game ended up being longer than we thought it would be.
Ah, okay, because of that because of that Kickstarter decision.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of the writing and stuff ended up making the game longer, and that affected the like choices that players were able to make in the game.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Well, because so a romantic story is going to have a lot of two steps forward, one step back type stuff. You have to keep people wanting things for a long period.
Yeah.
So what you end up having is you have to have like about like 3 or 4 hours minimum for one of these stories.
Okay.
At least like in the Steam reviews, it was surprising to me. Everybody mentioned the length of the game in the review at some point. It was just like the selling point.
Oh, wow.
And so the thing is we felt like committed to having about like 18 to 20 or so hours of content on a 5-person team. Mm. So that means that there's not a lot of affordances for being able to have elaborate branching.
Sure.
Except right at the end.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. I imagine that would make it very difficult to maybe... I guess you're telling more of a linear story, but I remember when I played Ruler by Default, there were a lot of like, there were numbers. A lot of numbers. And you know how Stephen Business likes his numbers.
Oh, I do. It's all about that bottom line. All about them. Yeah, well, I guess like maybe Gloria can give me a little bit of help here. We had a stat system that was pretty elaborate.
Mm-hmm.
You guys know I love me some stats. Mm. Stats are so juicy.
Yeah.
So you could imagine a situation where it's a dark, cold day outside, but the fire is roaring on the inside. And your teacher turns to you and say, hey, Mark, you've been practicing magic. Why don't you show off what you've learned to all these people? And you're given 4 choices. You could say, I'm not really feeling it right now. I'll create some little sparkles.
Uh-huh.
I'll summon a firebird, or I'll create a raging inferno.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't know how difficult these are, but you can sort of suss it out based on the size of the fire we're talking about.
Yeah.
You probably know the equation we're talking about here. We're saying like the further down that list you go, the more you're going to impress people, but the more chance you have of burning down the banquet hall.
So I'm already picturing percentages at play.
Sure.
Right?
Sure. Yeah. Now, there might not be any actual chance, but you don't know what I, the developer, have in
exactly.
my mind.
Yeah.
And of course, you get to choose based on how much time you think you've been developing magic versus everybody else.
Right. It brings a lot of that narrative focus to what is essentially like a stat check.
For sure.
Yeah.
And what it does is it means that you have all of these like little, I feel like I'm doing something. I feel like I'm making a choice based on my prior decisions without actually forking the story. It's very, very nice to be able to do that. We wanted to have a story like that would have all of these like little, like here's the main plot, but then there's like these little bubblings off of that where people feel like they're making an impact.
Yeah.
But sadly, we ended up having to cut even a lot of that stuff.
Oh,
we ended up shipping without the stat system.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Also, I was super optimistic about our budget. You know, when I was in college making $10 an hour, I was like, $6,000, so much money, I can do something.
Yeah.
And, you know, Kickstarter takes this cut, Steam takes this cut.
Right.
You have to make physical copies to ship, and ended up not, 6,000 wasn't enough money to make what I wanted to make.
Yeah.
It ended up being a lot of passion project, and a lot of our team members worked for very cheap or almost no budget. So thank you, Lane.
I forgot my spicy take. If you're going to add like 6 more hours of game content for something on Kickstarter, it should cost like 50 times as much as what we charge.
You might not ever expect people to get it, and so you put it at like a very high. You need 10,000 to get this character or something.
Yeah, again, like 1,000 sound like a fortune at that point.
Right, yeah. I gotcha. So I guess I wanted to know, like, there are different types of visual novels, and you brought up like the different choices and stuff, and they serve different audiences. Like, what are the different kinds of visual novels, and like how do they serve their audiences differently, I guess?
I guess it's really based on how much people want to play. Some people are okay with just sitting there and reading a book with no choices at all. Those are called kinetic novels, where you just basically sit and click to advance the story. And you just sit there and read.
Yeah.
Like Planetarian on Steam is the most popular one that I can think of. If people aren't into that, I don't want to sit and read book for 8 hours on my computer, they can do something that has more gameplay.
Princess Maker is probably the first one that comes to my mind.
Sure, Princess Maker.
Long Live the Queen, personal favorite.
Yeah, people argue if Princess Maker and Long Live the Queen can be part of a visual novel, but yeah, it's very story. you are. Ace Attorney is, I think, is one that has more gameplay that people want to do.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So a kinetic novel generally has one branch of story. You just start and everybody has to see the exact same ending.
Okay. And that was not what Ruler by Default was supposed to be, right?
Okay. Ruler by Default branches off a lot based on what choices you make, what you decide to do. And we actually had like 40 different endings.
So, oh, wow.
Yeah. They did a lot of work.
What's average for this, the scale of the game, of this game? Like, what are your compatriots? How many endings do they generally have?
Like a very basic visual novel is about dating the girls most commonly, and it's really based on how many girls they have in the game.
Uh-huh.
So usually they have like 3 to 5 dateable girls. Each characters usually have a bad ending, good ending, and the best ending. So generally 3, multiply it by that number of the girls, and sometimes there's a where endings where characters die or whatnot, where they don't get to complete the whole story.
Yeah, yeah. So it is essentially a formula, like this times this times that, more or less. And that's pretty consistent across the genre?
Oh, generally. That's like a very basic form.
Sure, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you've got games like Ace Attorney that has like a million bad endings that you can make by failing each check along the way.
Right.
But, you know, Ace Attorney, the like a bad ending is literally like, oh, you failed this. There's no really like story associated with it. It's just like, case closed, you lost, you know, and then they continue playing until they see that one good ending.
In terms of like what sort of values they serve, like if you're somebody like Stephen McGregor and you like making choices and you like numbers, you would want to play a game that lets you exercise more agency in the game.
Right.
If you're like a book reading nerd, then you're, there's these games like Clannad and such like that. They're a much more linear story.
Okay.
I don't know. Like you definitely know yourself. Do you care about having a long, like satisfying story? Personally, if I wanted that, I would probably read a book. And so I'm much more about stats.
Sure.
But I mean, it was a very interesting chance to develop the other side working on this game.
Speaking of writing, how do you write engaging dialogue? Because it's hard, right?
it's so hard.
Okay.
And I would say that like even in like in this game, working on this for forever, maybe nailed it like 1 out of 8 times or something like that.
Oh.
It is super, super tough.
And this game is mainly just dialogue between you and the other characters in the game, right?
Yeah.
It's not a lot of like prose narrative stuff, right?
Oh, or, absolutely not. Yeah. Very like there's a little bit of internal dialogue of the main character thinking inside his own.
Sure.
It's mainly you and the other characters talking. The engine does an amazing amount of work.
Okay.
Like if the dialogue like animates in like a snappy way, it feels so much different. And I think that one of the things that Gloria actually did that made everything pop a lot is after I handed it off the script, she added like a ton of like motion graphics of characters like animating into place, a ton of animations on like what the characters do.
And you developed the game in RenPy, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. I have a little bit of experience because I used it to make a visual novel in at a game jam once.
Ooh.
But, long time ago. I didn't like do any of the code or anything like that. Is it easy to like implement those kinds of things?
Yes, it's very easy. Like RenPy itself comes with already like save, load, album, and a lot of things already built in. Okay. So engine itself is pretty built. If you want to animate characters jumping, like you have to use a little bit of a Python to animate it.
Okay.
Very easy. Just move X axis up and down in this frame of time, whatnot.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Code itself is fairly easy. So that's why visual novels are really good to just jump in. And if you want to make some video game without learning tons of programming, it's very, you know, story heavy.
That's true. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In terms of engaging dialogue, there's two ways to sort of make it. Two ways you can go.
Yeah. Okay.
You can go funny and you can go mysterious.
Mm-hmm.
And, funny is something that you can kind of do if you're lucky. If you wake up on the right side of the bed that day,
sure.
You can be funny. Mysterious, this is why it was wonderful coming into a project where Gloria had created the main framework for all of the stories and has like planned out the path for everything.
Yeah.
So you knew going down one path what every other possibility was. So you could start doing things that would like allude to things that would happen in the future.
Yeah.
And that can sort of string people along quite satisfying.
Yeah.
It's kind of a cheat and it's something that you don't have to get lucky with in the same way that you do with being funny.
Yeah, one of the I know just from writing I've done that it's like writers get a lot of credit for that sort of like seeding those ideas.
Yeah.
But most of the time, this stuff is written backwards. And it's not, I mean, it's, it becomes the structure of writing. And,
yeah. It makes me look clever, but yeah. really it's the project manager.
Which isn't to say it's not difficult.
Yeah.
It's just, it's difficult in a different way than I think most people realize.
Mm-hmm. And also about like the choices you make in the game. How do you make those interesting and important in a way that like makes the player feel like they have some agency in the story and the narrative? Makes it feel like a game.
Well, if they genuinely do have agency,
yeah.
then that's not that hard. Like okay. if your choice legitimately sends them hurtling off on a different critical path that they
oh, sure.
could not reach otherwise,
sure.
then there's no need to give any illusion. And the thing is, if there is illusion, I think people can really pierce that very, very quickly.
Uh-huh.
So the answer to that is being honest is the only thing you can really do.
Okay.
Like, I think that like in a game of this length, people feel unsafe if they're going to be like, this choice is going to change my direction for the next 4 hours.
Ah, okay.
So you sort of have to like give choices that that clearly converge at some point.
Okay, I see.
Basically, like you want, if you have a choice that is meaningful,
mm-hmm.
Like we have some that are just like clearly like life and death decisions. I thought, I don't know what your opinion on this, Gloria, is, but like I thought it was very important to broadcast that, not to have these sort of choose your own adventure book style situations where it's like, make some toast. Sure, making toast sounds great. 3 episodes later, uh-oh, drop the toaster in the bathtub, now I'm dead. Yeah. how was I supposed to know that?
So, right.
So I guess like it was very, very clear, like important to like signpost that stuff.
Okay,
so
yeah.
people would know if I'm going to save the game, if I'm going to cheat with my finger in the book, mm. I'm going to do that right now.
Mm-hmm. Ah, okay. Okay. And is that how like it was designed in that way too?
Yeah. Like at one point we literally created a NPC that runs up and says, you should really save yourself and just run off. And if you make wrong choices, you die around that time and the game was done forever. So. And you know, different games does it differently. Like mm-hmm. for our game, when players made the choice, we didn't give any indication right away if it was good choice or bad choice. But some other game like to immediately indicate, oh, that was good choice by giving like, you know, like positive sound effect or increase, like show a stat increase or whatnot. For
okay.
us, we didn't do any of those. Like sometimes people get a bad ending because they would keep making bad choices and they wouldn't even know because a lot of our characters or NPCs didn't like words like, oh God, you just offended me and walk away or anything like that.
Yeah.
They just smile, but they secretly judged you and their voice was getting lower and whatnot.
This character will remember this and all that.
Where it was possible, uh-huh. we did a lot of callbacks to things.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Of course, if we had like a lot of signposting on our stat system, mm-hmm. like the relationship points the characters have,
mm-hmm.
it would have been even more clear, but we did do a bunch of stuff like, this is why I did this, because you did this 10 episodes ago.
Okay.
But
yeah,
it is, of course, immoral for game makers to create something where the place where you lose is 10 episodes behind where you actually
made the decision.
Forfeit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Quest for Glory. No, not Quest for Glory. God, King's Quest V. Yeah. So we did as few of that, little of that as possible.
Yeah, right. I imagine that would be very frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you do not understand why you made this decision mm-hmm. or why this decision caused you to fail
yes.
in the future.
Yeah. I think there was like one point where it was just too much fun to do that. So we kept it in.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And when the way we did it, we had like hidden variables for each different character.
Okay.
So like for Mori, and it was like, there was a lot of different choices. And every time you make a choice,
mm-hmm.
her point went up by one or went down by one.
Mm-hmm.
So you had to just screw up a lot of times to get a bad ending. Or if you had to do a lot of times to get a good ending.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't have any one particular. Well, we had very few choices that would actually break the game or end the gameplay for you.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was more of a sequence of a lot of choices that you had to make.
I got you. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So I was going to ask, do you think that like, are there ways to make impactful decisions more subtly than that? But it sounds like if you just make the decisions, clearly make differences, but like over time.
Like if anything, this game was probably a little bit too subtle,
oh,
I would say.
Okay.
Because this game was clearly made by people who live in Minnesota. There was a lot of times, as Gloria says,
yeah.
where like you say something that offends somebody and they're like, oh, okay, that's so funny. And then hold it against you. So if you're talking about subtle ways to mess up,
oh boy.
Yeah. This is the game.
All right.
Yeah.
So it's Minnesotan.
Yeah. Well, there's at least one character who definitely is.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Well, oh, I want to know, like, where do you feel the direction of visual novels will be going in the future?
I wish I knew.
I mean, so I talked about this a little bit at IGDA.
Yeah.
I think that the market forces right now are really against, like, the standard.
Okay.
Because there are so many standard games like ours that have come out mm-hmm. where you can, like, date 5 or 6 girls mm-hmm. and they each have a long route to them. Mm-hmm. Why? Because that has been the way it's gone for the last 30 years. There's so many of them out there. They age really well. If you play a visual novel from 30 years ago, it's still a decent game because mm-hmm. it's mainly text.
Right. Okay.
Additionally, many of those games are beautifully illustrated, have great motion effects, and a lot of them are Japanese and are just now in 2018 being translated over to American shores.
Okay. So they're like fresh in our eyes.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So the thing is, like, if you're a fan of this genre, if we were launching a Steam maybe 5 years ago when mm-hmm. you were first considering this project, mm-hmm. you might have thought, wow, this is an underserved audience. Mm-hmm. They're getting maybe 2 games a year.
Yeah.
And there were, I think at that point, about 10 to 15 different English visual novels on Steam. And now, of course, it's like 500 or something. Mm-hmm. It's just crazy high number. And they're really, really good. And so I think that Americans are going to have a couple of choices. Either start translating your stuff into underserved languages. Mm-hmm. Keep that going. We, in fact, just had a person volunteer to translate our game into French.
Wow.
So we're hoping to get some of those French dollars. however, I think that another good direction to go in is to just keep branching out as wildly as possible. Mm-hmm. Had a Full Boyfriend and Dream Daddy both made some bucks
yeah.
because they weren't like everything else.
Okay. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. How much text is in your game? Do you know?
We have 150,000 words.
Yeah.
Is that like the standard?
Or? So, no, it's a pinch high, especially for like an indie one.
Okay.
It's about the length of Fellowship of the Ring or so.
Oh, wow. Okay. That puts it into perspective.
Yeah. It's a lot lower compared to like Japanese ones that will come up, yes. but it's higher compared to like English indie visual novel ones.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Okay.
But yeah, there's definitely a need for it. But the gameplay itself is generally very long. Mm. So usually don't have one person just going around playing every single one of them. And there's just so many. It's pretty easy to make. So there's a lot of people getting into making it. So I think what we need to do to make visual novel feel bigger is to get other people that aren't into visual novel to be into it,
yeah.
if that makes sense.
How do you think you'd go about doing that?
So right now when people think of like visual novels, they generally think of, oh, it's an anime, you know, dating simulator with anime girls. Mm-hmm. You do it because you want to get laid and you're probably in the basement by yourself. No,
oh,
you know,
like,
you know, I mean, I made it and I love it. So I just got insulted myself. But, okay. You know, but it's not all of them are like that. There's ones with really great storylines.
Yeah.
Like you guys should go and play Steins Gate. And you guys should go and play Roller by Default.
Yeah,
but it's just, I think it's important that we make it so that, you know, other audiences feel comfortable playing it. And,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that like you were talking about what the sort of standard game is, mm-hmm. like the mechanics are very similar and there's a huge backlog. Mm-hmm. And I think that idea of it, the topics are, it's kind of true, right? Mm-hmm. It's you're a boy in school half the time mm-hmm. and you date a bunch of anime girls. Like, it's kind of a slur against the genre, mm-hmm. but there's a lot of truth to it. And I don't know, what's the difficulty of breaking out of that in terms of, when you say get more audience in, I know that is 100% the reason I'm not interested in visual novels. It's mm-hmm. like, I'm not interested in that story. Mm-hmm. And like, I guess I don't have a problem with people who are, mm-hmm. but I would like to play a game with those mechanics, but I don't think there are any for me. So why is it that story, that type of story is so reliable and so popular?
Well, the easy answer to this is romance novels.
Yeah.
Are they the same average quality as like best, like equal selling, novels and other genres? It's a really, really hard question to ask.
Yeah.
But I think like this is a genre where if you have a like romantic appeal, there's a certain number of people who are going to be like led on by that.
Yeah.
Who are going to be very like enticed by this. And it's really easy to write. Like
sure.
especially if you have like pretty drawings to go along with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's very like enticing to a certain audience.
Yeah.
I think that when you go away from that, it's going to get a lot harder because that's just like a really like base level way to attract people.
Sure, sure. Right. It's almost like a snowball down a hill. Like absolutely. It's worked in the past. There is an audience for it.
And they do expect it. Yeah.
So maybe it's not necessarily anything really about that type of story. It's just that's the one that stuck. Maybe that's being generous. I don't know.
Man, that's a really interesting question.
Sorry, I didn't understand the
Well, I think a lot of the like the examples you gave, the ones that really are trying to be new and different, a lot of them are they subvert those tropes. Mm-hmm. And that is a way to movies do that too. Like action, like interesting action movies are the ones that subvert the action movie tropes, etc.
Oh, for sure.
And so it's even the ones that are sort of different, a lot of them still lean on those. What is very common about that, and I just wonder how perpetual that is.
I mean, there is absolutely room out there for telling a compelling like fantasy story this way or a sci-fi story this way.
Yeah.
In fact, I think that we've seen a lot of people in the area make like sci-fi stories in this style. However, I think that you have a really good point, much in the same way that like you have a number of mechanical tropes in action games, for example.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that this is just tightly bound to romance. I don't know if there's like a really like reason that it has to be that way.
But like the thing about it is it's such a big space, it's so well done, but there's room to be innovative within it.
For sure.
Right.
I mean, you know, when there is like this really great visual novel, it probably exists out there that just doesn't have the popularity because it's not known. And that's the thing about visual novels. Mm-hmm. Like, you really don't know how good it is unless someone recommends it to you or you just happen to pick it up because art is really pretty. Because reading by the synopsis, you really don't know how good the writing's gonna be.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Just like picking up a book off a bookshelf. Unless it's like some bestseller, you're not gonna just go and casually pick up the first book you see.
Right. And like mm-hmm. like an action game, you're like, this story looks interesting. Mm-hmm. I don't care if it's well written. I've played games like this. This looks great. Whereas visual novel, it's like the blurb tells you a little bit, but doesn't tell you how good the story is.
Yeah, you can't just be like, oh, this gameplay looks interesting. Because generally it's gonna be reading text.
But people can be drawn in by good art, as you say. Mm-hmm. And speaking of, you did all the art for this game, right?
Yeah. Well, I commissioned some of the background arts, but I did all the character art and like all the designing stuff.
So tell us a little bit about that process. Like what, like from ideation to like your workflow. Like, I want to hear all about it.
Well, I originally did comic drawing. So it was whenever I think of story, I kind of did it. I think of it in like animation format, comic format in my head. I don't think of it as text as much. So it was easy for me to draw. And I think that was a benefit of having artists as like a main producer that I can just be like, oh, well, I guess I'll create more art. I can make it.
Probably not an easy thing for other productions to do, right?
Yeah, right. They can't just be like, hey, draw this one art that's really specific to this one scene.
Yeah.
So I had liberty to do that. Also, like a lot of what I did was I worked everything in layers. So there's a layer for face, there's a layer for eyes, there's a layer for mouth. Mm-hmm. So I can just kind of like toggle on and off the switch, as per to say, for different layers.
Oh, so you can recompose rather than having to do a whole new
a bunch of different images.
That's nice. Mm-hmm. That's a very video game kind of efficiency.
Yeah.
That's great.
For sure.
So, is that a selling point compared to other visual novels? Like, the game has maybe a little bit more artistic variety than you'd
absolutely.
Expect?
Absolutely. Yeah? It has a lot more than you expect. I think. You know the genre better than I do, but I think that this has like so many more character animations than you would expect given the budget of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And one thing that I will say about Gloria is that I've worked with a lot of artists. She works faster than anybody I've ever met. Nice. So there is just so much character art in this game.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So how have you, now that it's out, right? And so your Kickstarter backers are satisfied, I hope?
Yeah, we got to send the physical goodies still.
Yeah. Well, other than, although I think people now expect that stuff to be delayed. I think people at this point know what they're getting into.
Yeah.
What's the process of like marketing it, getting that audience? It's selling the unique points that you have and existing within this sort of wide world where a lot of things are similar and it's hard to stand out.
So for right now, like a lot of, like I said, visual novel community is very niche. The people that will buy visual novels usually are around that particular group of the internet. Yeah. Like, you know, there's Discord channel dedicated to it. There's Reddit's pretty big. There's different specific forums that are for visual novel players that usually other gamers don't necessarily visit very often.
Sure.
So I usually market it around those areas.
Okay.
And there's like a lot of visual novel particular reviewers that helped us as well. And Twitter's pretty big.
Uh-huh. Wait, do you have a Ruler by Default Twitter?
We have our studio Twitter. Ah. I'm still very new to it. I'm still learning. It's tough.
Well, shoot, I got to follow that.
Yay.
One thing that I want to bring up is that back in 2014 when we did the Kickstarter,
yes,
there was a much like a great deal more audience hunger out there for this genre.
Oh, sure.
And so the weird thing is like a ton of our sales come from Kickstarter and like their friends from that time. So it's like the game did like okay. Mm-hmm. And like a lot of that is because of the time machine factor of people being interested in it when they first got interested in 2014.
Mm-hmm. Well, that means that like the interest has persisted throughout the years, right?
Oh, absolutely.
So that's really cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And the game has been well reviewed. I've seen a couple of the reviews. People seem to be really high on the story as well, right?
Yeah.
I guess you've probably seen all the negative reviews, right?
All zero of them.
Oh, like,
yay! 20 out of 20 that are positive
at this point
on Steam, which equates to an 82% positive rating according to Google.
Yeah, what?
That math checks
outraged.
Out.
Yeah. Right? 20 out of 20 equals 82. It's because the game doesn't have enough ratings.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So we should all go on and give it 5 stars, right?
Please. People are generally very positive and nice on Steam, especially toward indie game of our size.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we're very thankful to our Steam reviewers. Thank you.
Well, that's interesting. You think that's the trend with a lot of visual novels? Is that like people are more, they're good about this?
No. Very discriminating audience.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, toward like indie games in general, not toward particularly visual novels, I think people are generally nicer to small teams.
Okay.
Yeah. Like a little social commentary here. Plug your ears at home. If you looked at the Verdant Skies.
Yeah.
Hi, Beth. Hi, Andy. Hi, Lizzie. Hi, Troy. if you look at the Verdant Skies page, the only thumbs down that they got were from people who disagreed with them in terms of like socio-political reasons.
Oh, right. They just disagreed with the premise of the game.
Absolutely.
Rather than anything about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So like in terms of like the quality of game, she's totally right. Indie games get like a little bit of a bump in terms of percent.
Okay.
Yeah. Hmm. From people being nice.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah. Our game had a gender non-binary character, and people were generally like, yeah, I just didn't interact with them. I'm like, oh, okay. I put a lot of effort into the design of the character, but okay. Yeah.
You probably get a lot of people, like, I mean, it's a romance genre.
Yeah.
So people bring their own, not just their own, their tolerances and their sort of community interests, but their own personal preferences.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And so that probably does make it a little harder to break through with those types of characters than you would in other types of genres, mm-hmm. right?
Definitely.
Especially ones where you really personify the main character mm-hmm. more than you do in maybe other types of genres, right?
That's true. You're right.
Yeah, and this is what burns my biscuits just a little bit, because the best written character in the game looks like she's 14 years old. Yes, she is like 400 years old, actually. But she wouldn't be the one that I would date in real life, but she does have the best story. God.
Well, so it goes.
Heard it here first.
Well, maybe that will, if people hear you talking about like the different characters that you might not necessarily think at first, oh, I'll be interested in that character. Like maybe when people play visual novels, they should try like picking someone they wouldn't usually pick in real
mm-hmm.
life.
Mm-hmm. For sure. That's what the achievements are for, right?
Yeah.
Force them to play.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a certain audience that will like make sure they play through every single mm-hmm. choice. And, mm-hmm. Yeah. And see all their...
See, achievements can be good, Steven.
Okay.
Totally good.
Fine.
Lane, at the IDGA talk, you made an interesting point about the types of players who do play all the endings or just go through once or twice, and what that means to the content you write and how many of the people actually read it.
Yeah.
When you were structuring the game, because I know another thing you said, Lane, and this question is really long. Another thing you'd said was
I can't tell if you're going to pitch this to me or Glory.
Just, you know, sit tight. But you had said that a lot of the story elements hinted at other story elements that were not part of those paths. So I will pitch it to you, Gloria. When you structured the sort of overall plot of the story, how much did you expect or hope, perhaps, players to sort of go through it to see the whole picture.
Oh, I definitely hope every player will go through every single path.
Yeah.
Turns out that's not necessarily the case.
Uh-huh.
But I even included some very important detail on this very minor bad endings, hoping players will get to it. And right now we're in the process of working on Steam achievement that we didn't have it in the original.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the Steam achievement, you can only unlock it if you see every single ending. And
yeah,
I'm hoping that will give players some advantage to go through and see everything.
Sure, sure. Mm-hmm. And Lane, you can take it as well. Like when you're writing those little moments, those dialogue pieces, like how much did you try to weave in enough of that to entice players to go again?
Well, like oodles, like a ton, a ton. Like you can't like... You really have a hard time figuring out why your character ended up in this world until you go through a couple of different story paths.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. Like your previous work has influences the rest of the work.
Yeah.
In a way. Okay.
Well, because the point that I was trying to make at that talk was that if you're going to make, if you have a limited budget and you want to make everything count, it's fantastic to do a story that's just completely linear because you know that 100% of your work goes to your audience's eyeballs.
Yeah.
Similarly, if you're doing a game like Monster Prom, you're doing a game like The Yogg, you know that 200% of your work goes to your audience's eyeballs because they will usually see every piece of content multiple times by the time they stop playing.
Right.
If you're doing a game like us that's somewhere in the middle where you have meaningful choices that take you to different paths, what that means is like 16% of your work goes to the audience's eyeballs because they could like a player who goes after girl A won't see the stuff that you wrote for B, C, D, E, and F.
Sure, yeah.
And so, yeah, you definitely try to give the audience some little like breadcrumbs to hint that going after somebody else is going to help them understand everything.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Roguelike visual novel where each time through you have some sort of advantage back from the previous playthrough.
Ah, okay. Well, you get knowledge, right? You get knowledge. That's part of roguelike. It should be.
It is the best part of roguelikes.
Right, yeah. I like that idea. Mm-hmm. Should be more of that.
Yeah, that idea of one game that did a pretty good job of giving you those hints without having you to play on a single playthrough, but you still was Her Story.
Yeah.
Where that game is, I mean, you could call it a visual novel in a sense. Its mechanics are very different. Mm-hmm. But you could end that game whenever you wanted, like once you felt like you got the picture. Or you could keep playing. And so instead of starting over, you just went further. And like I think that might be able to work in a visual novel setting where you could, you know, reach the end of a story, but then go off on side paths or something. I think there's some compromise you have to make in the narrative structure. But I don't know, maybe maybe trying to guarantee that all your players will see everything might lead you to make some bad design decisions.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. In fact, like you could absolutely say with this game that one path through the game, which is what about like 70% of players do, does not tell you the answer to the question that you have from the start.
Yeah.
So like, is that a flaw? I have no idea. Like we're trying to like entice people to play more, but like, is that the right move?
Well, it depends on if you like Nier Automata or not. Because that game has, you need 5 endings in order to get the full game.
There goes the reference. Over my head.
Well, the way Nier Automata, Oh, you played it?
Yeah, I watched it.
Ah, okay. Well, the way that game works is like you play through the game as one character, and then when you get to the end, you get that ending. It's ending A. And then when you play it again, you play as the character who was following this other character. And so, like, you get his perspective, and then also, like, more information about other things because he has different abilities and stuff. And then you go through it again as a continuation of both endings A and B when you beat it the third time. So, you have to play the game 3 times in order to get through the whole game and get the whole story.
Yeah, if that's something that, like, aggravates you about that game,
right,
it would probably do that about our game.
Yeah.
Okay. And doesn't that game, like, throw up a title card to, like, make it obvious that like the game's not really over?
It totally does at the end of every end.
it didn't trust its audience to like discover that about it.
I'm sure they probably did some focus tests and people were just like, I'm good. And then, but. Yeah.
Well, I guess we're kind of wrapping up here. Is there any kind of final pitch you want to make? You've got an audience here to sell your game to.
Whoa. We haven't reached the best story of the whole thing.
Oh,
snap.
Yeah. So this is one that I'm going to have to ease up close to the mic here. Take you guys on a little journey.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So I want to bring you back to 2016. to my backyard. Mm-hmm. There I am, tanning. Got my laptop open, tippity tapping, because why not get a tan while you write?
Hey.
I could think of a couple reasons, but okay.
Creative juices are flowing.
Gross.
The melanoma is building.
Okay.
I'm realizing as I work through these stories that every single one of them has a common theme. I'm looking at this and I'm thinking every character in this game, their story is all about finding a home. Their story is all about finding acceptance in a place where they don't belong. Even the characters who greet you at the very start of the game, something has just happened that makes them feel like they're living in an entirely new world when you get there. And so I start putting the pieces together. I start asking Gloria, you are somebody who moved to America just like a couple of years before writing this game. Am I right?
Yeah.
Am I approximately correct? Am I close? You're not going to throw off my story if I'm off by a couple of years. Okay. I was thinking, well, do these things come together? Like, is this story all about the immigrant's experience? And what she told me was really interesting, that she did not intentionally do this. Mm. She did not intentionally like say, oh, you know what this game needs? It needs some sort of motif. No, this was never the intent. But what she told me later was that it's really important for anybody who wants to make a visual novel, the thing that will feed you more than anything else, because as we discussed, market forces, not great for indie Americans at this point. The thing that's going to feed you, that's going to put food in your stomach in terms of making this game, fire
that's
in your belly.
That's what
feed
does.
Thank you. We found the metaphors.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you. Is you have to write a story that is interesting and true to you. And what emerged from this by just sort of like, Every step along the way, writing a story that appealed to her, emerged something that is much, much more meaningful than, I don't know, than we ever expected.
Yeah.
And I would say, like, if you're trying to write a story and trying to appeal to the mass market instead of writing something that's interesting to you, then you're not doing it right, because you are missing out on the biggest payment that you can get out of this. Which is, if you're, again, an indie writing a visual novel in 2018, the biggest payment that you get is getting your story out there.
Yeah.
And if you're not doing that, then I think that you're wasting your time. Like I said, spicy takes.
That's a beautiful sentiment.
Well, I mean, it's a really great big idea. And it's nice that you like discovered that as in this collaborative process. Gloria, you said that wasn't an intent, like that direct sort of personalization.
It was really interesting. I watched some guy playing the game and he was like, oh man, they're totally talking about racism. I'm like, oh. Yeah. Oh. And it's just like, you know, as a writer, you're not really like trying to, but definitely a part of you is going to end up there. This vision I was very long. So write something that appeals to you and it's true to you. Thanks, Lane.
Yeah.
Very well said.
Thank you. So there may be one or two listeners who don't already know about the game. Where can they find it? And where can they find both of you?
Ruler by Default is on Steam. Steam search, Ruler by Default. And we're Studio Pistachi. It's Pistachio without the O.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
But what about yourselves?
Oh, my name is Gloria Kim. I'm on Twitter under Pistachi Studio. We have a Facebook page. Come and write on our Steam Hub. And I'm sometimes on a local conventions a lot. I go to all the big ones, except Detour. And when can they find you, Lane?
If you want to talk to me, then MSP Game Dev Slack is the way to go. It's the only place I'll respond. If you want to talk about me, there's only one place. It's called nicegames.club/feedback. It's my favorite website. It's my homepage.
Someone's keeping the torch alive. I like it.
Oh, boy.
Always.
Well, we'll put all that in the show notes so people can find the game and you guys as well. I mean, not you, Lane, I suppose, but
it'll be tough. Guys, thanks for listening to my show. Gloria, you can come too. Thanks for being here.
Dear Lord.
Now, audience, if you haven't already, you can subscribe to Nice Games Club in your favorite podcast app and be sure to give it a good review if you liked it or are nice, like these three. We really do need to know you're out there, so leave a review and tell all your friends too. We also want to hear directly from you, so follow us on Twitter and all the other things. Nice Games Club is our Twitter handle. Let us know how we're doing. Send us your topic. Ask us your questions. Lastly, you can find more about the show, your nice hosts, and our nice guests, as well as get all the links and notes from this and other episodes at nicegames.club.
And so, until we start again, remember to
play nice
and make nice.
That's our show.
You ruined our episode.
Not kind of. It's over. Okay. That's our show.
It's not over yet.
I got it. Is it though? I want it over. That's our show.
Well, if Stephen Business says so.
Thank you.
I'll let you do your outro. Okay.
Jeez. That's our
it's
show.
It's been fun.
This is going to be the longest after outro, after theme music clip yet.
You know what they have in Egypt? The Library of Alexandria.
God damn it.
And you know what? When I said it was time to do the outro, it was a lie.
That doesn't...
Brary.
Oh, okay. No, I get it. No, I get it. Oh, my God.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.